the sound. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham. With us today is, we have an expert, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome to the show, Brendan Mahan. He is a coach, I guess. I got to be honest with you, Brendan. I feel like this is kind of a job that you made up, but I'm probably wrong about this, is that you are an ADHD expert is what I want to call you. This is not a term you gave yourself.
I am happy to claim that term, because it's true. But
then let's run with it. Business cards. All you need in America, I believe, is just to have business cards that say your job title, and then technically you're that. As a guy who did stand up comedy for a living, the definition of calling oneself a comic is very loosey goosey. I don't know if it translates into the ADHD world, but yeah. And let me first get into this. Let's get to know you, and then we'll get into what you do. These are the questions I ask all first time guests. So first out of the box, what is your hall pass list?
My hall pass list. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the hall pass list?
I am. It's the stuff I can get away with, right?
Well, I would love to talk more about that. But I'm talking about like a celebrity. Who's a celebrity or multiple celebrities that that you have predetermined with your spouse to say that if so-and-so ever made a move on me, then or I had a chance, I can make a move and I would be absolved of any legal action.
Yeah, I don't think we've done that.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm really worried about your marriage, man. I'm really worried. You got to sit down. Yeah. Don't let her tell you, because then it ruins. Here's what I've learned. When she tells you all of the ones that that she has on her list, it's very different for a guy, because whenever we do it, it's like, haha, funny, funny, cute, stupid guy stuff, right? But yeah. I feel like any woman really does have a viable chance. I don't care who the guy is. I just feel like their odds are statistically much, much greater than ours ever would be. You think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Like, give me a celebrity that your wife is into. Do you even know?
The guy who played Desmond in Lost is, I don't know the actor's name, but Desmond from Lost is probably being, the number one.
You're being such a great, like, stereotypical husband right now. Like, and I'm not thinking, only is your show like 10 years old, but this is so great. All right, let's see.
Well,
people are yelling into their earbuds.
One, if I may.
Go for it.
I'm pretty sure she's got a thing for Prince T'Challa from Black Panther.
Oh,
or King T'Challa.
I don't know for sure. I know you're jealous, but don't undermine him. All right. He's got an official. Oh, Henry Ian Cusick.
Is that his name?
Yeah, that's the guy. For anybody who's not remembering and not yelling into their earbuds right now. No. You're thinking of Chadwick Boseman for Black Panther. I'm talking about Henry Ian Cusick is the Desmond from Lost.
Okay. All right.
And he's the guy who was on the boat arrived on the island before I think everybody else got there, if I'm not mistaken. It was a long time ago, and the show was very confusing with a lot of different plot twists. So I apologize if I'm mixing up my Lost lore, as they put it. That's the official term, Brendan. All right, so now we know your wife's. Now, who's on your list? Do you have any celebrity crushes? Because I feel like this says a lot about a man. Like,
We'll go Alison Brie.
Oh, that's a great choice. She is not only talented, funny, but easy on the eyes. That's a great choice.
I think we'll go Alison Brie.
That's good. Do you think if you were to say, because here's the thing, mine is Jennifer Goodwin. I'm also a fan. Jennifer Goodwin is mine, and I don't know if you ever saw the show Big Love, but I just feel like I think that she's easy to talk to. I don't really get into the filthy part of it. Like, I'm not interested in making a move. It's like a physical move. I'm talking about, I find her attractive and I would love to have a cheating date. Like, I would make her I would emotionally cheat on my wife with Jennifer Goodwin, is I guess what I'm trying to say. All right. Last movie you cried at, Brendan.
Oh man. I don't know.
Do you cry at movies ever?
I honestly don't think that I've ever cried at a movie.
Okay. Let me define crying, because maybe your parameters are different. I'm not talking about full-blown, like, baby weep, heaving, like, ugly face, right? I'm just talking about single tear or a little bit of a well up that seems like a dusty itchiness in your eyes. What I will also count as a man cry at a movie.
All right. So we're not talking. We're talking emotionally moved.
Yeah. Just like, and you've, right. But water, I want moisture. I want a higher level of precipitation. I want to see that jump up on my Yahoo weather app to at least 50% chance of precipitation in this instance.
We'll go Black Panther.
Nice.
Cause that speech from, I can't remember anybody's name. That's all of okay. My actor names are out of my head right now.
That's all right.
The villain, the bad guy.
Oh, Michael Jordan Jr.
Michael Jordan. Thank you. His, like, my brothers who jumped off the boat to die free men rather than go to be held in bondage. Like, that was, if you didn't get emotionally moved and well up a little bit from that. I'll go there.
All right. And if you could have any job other than the job you have, what job would that be?
I would be a comic book writer.
Really? Do you have any like artistic gifts, or is it just you like the industry, you like the idea of it, and you would like to just write the stories?
Yeah, no, I am not an artist in terms of drawing, but in terms of writing the stories, I would love to have done that. And I came close. That is really? A thing I kind of sort of pursued.
And what made it go away? Can I ask, or is it a sore subject?
No, it's not sore. It's I majored in comic books at UMass Amherst.
No, you did not. You shut your
swear
mouth.
To God.
You shut swear your to mouth. God. Yeah. Get off of my podcast. You majored in comic books. Yeah. I am both irritated and jealous of you at the exact same time. Yeah.
So since we're doing ADHD stuff, my road to there from UMass was I started as a psychology major. Then I went to English, realized the English majors were not allowed to write. And was like, that's dumb. Oh, hey, they have a program that lets you design your own major. So I did that. And I called it officially creative writing. But of my 36 credits in that major, 12 of them were on comic books.
That's awesome.
I just knew better than to actually name it comic books, because that on a resume is not a plan.
Yeah.
but I took two classes, comic art in North America and international graphic novel with this guy, N.C. Couch was my professor's name. And then I ran a conference on graphic novels that had some big names for comic book geeks. So we had Will Eisner and James O'Barr and Scott McCloud and some other people who are less big names than that. And I also worked at Kitchen Sink Press, which is an underground comic publishing company.
Wow.
Yeah, and as an intern, so it's not like I did. I mean, I worked in the editorial department.
Yeah, but you're there. You know what I mean? That's what's great about that kind of stuff is I feel like I'm coming towards the tail end of mine, my journey. Like when I was in first grade, I wanted to be a comic, and I went out and I did it and everything. But then I just kind of found that I'm going to deviate real quick, and I'm sorry, Brendan. Yeah. But I recently, when I was out on the road, as much as I love making people laugh, that I really, there is something about that that just fills me completely, to be honest.
I'm with you. I speak professionally. I get you.
And so when I did that, but then the problem was, is I had these stupid kids, Brendan, these stupid kids that as much as I'm around them drive me nuts and drive me up a wall. But when I'm away from them, even right now, like today is my day off from my stupid part-time job. That I act like is a full-time job and have real problems. But while they're at school, I miss them. Even though yesterday I was coaching two football games with them and everything. So that's just how I'm wired. And I was having this conversation with my dad. And I'm going to start doing I want to try to bring my dad into the show more. And one of the ideas I had is I want to have a regular kind of segment with him. Because he's always so smart about like solving my problems. I don't know if everybody's dad has this gift or not, but I love his insight for things he has no idea or shouldn't have any concept of what's going on. And I hope that it's age. I hope that it's constantly having 21 years of age on me, and that therefore I will always be more wise than my children, because if I can't provide them the same sage wisdom that he does, they are fucked. But anyway, I'm sitting there and I'm like, cause I'm kicking around this idea of not doing the radio thing anymore. Cause it just doesn't seem to, I can't get a foothold, like, you know, kind of a thing. There's lots of like, oh, like there's lots of that feeling, and I'm just getting tired of it, you know? And so I told him, I said, you know, I kind of feel bad. Like I want to go into real estate. And he said, I think that's a great idea. And I said, really? I go, well, what if I'm giving up on the comedy thing? He said, you didn't give up. He said, you did it. And he goes, and then you learned that you'd rather be around your kids. Like right now, I'm building this fort. He goes, you have fun building a fort for your kids. And if you're a stand-up comic who's gone 3-4 weeks out of every month, you can't do that. And that's fine. That's called priority, son, is what he said. And it's so funny because he's also the guy who was trying to talk me out of not doing or not quitting comedy. But I think it's that he realized after the fact, or maybe he was just trying to push me to pursue my dream. I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. Point is, the whole reason I brought all that up is that he gave me that when he said that, I was like, oh, that's a really good point. And it doesn't diminish the fact that even though you were an intern working at this comic books, is that you were pursuing, you were interested, you did it. Your life took you in a different journey. But I don't think you look back with regret. Am I wrong?
No, okay. Not even a little bit. I lost track of it because out Amherst, and UMass Amherst is where I went. And there's another town called Northampton that's right nearby that had all this comic book stuff. Kitchen Sink Press was there. The Words and Pictures Museum, which was launched by Kevin Eastman of Ninja Turtle fame.
Oh.
That was there too. And in the span of about 6 months, both of them went out of business. Like they both shut down. And I was just like thrown because that was how I was getting my foot in the door, you know, and then all my door shut and cut my toes off. And I was like, what do I do with this? And I wound up doing what every idiot kid who majored in writing or English does when they leave college and don't know how to find a job. And I ended up working at Barnes & Noble. Like, that's writing.
Yeah.
I'm going to sell other people's writing. And then and that led me into teaching. And I became an English teacher for a while, which then led me to the ADHD work that I do now.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we'll get into that in a minute. But I got a couple more questions. What do you want most for your kids?
I want them to have a comfortable balance between security and drive.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, like I want them to feel safe and feel secure, right, but also have this drive that makes them want more, like whether that's learning or doing or creating or whatever that is for them. But I don't want it to be so comfortable that they lack the drive, and I don't want them to be so driven that it just turns into anxiety and nothing happens.
Right.
So I want them in that sweet spot in the middle.
Because one of the things I've dealt with, not only in my comedy, I've seen it with other comics and even on this show, is that early on when my kids were really young, it's really hard to get a grasp on what's going on as a parent, right? But as they've kind of gotten older, I feel like I'm in a little bit of a sweet spot before they become teenagers. And I'm like, oh no, what if the show's no good? What if, you know what I mean? Like you lose that struggle, that hunger, which I think is what you're kind of talking about too, that keeps you moving, that keeps it like, oh God, what am I going to talk about? It turns out, they worked it out for me, and there's lots of bullshit. And there's also my own bullshit too, that I think everybody can go through and relate. But point is, I agree, is that you want them to not starve. Right. But you want them to be hungry. You want them to fight for stuff and work for stuff, because then they get to enjoy that sense of accomplishment when they get what they work for or finish what they've been working on. But we would like for them to not have to do it with fear. Right.
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 Last argument you had with your spouse, if you're comfortable sharing. Is that a no?
No, I'm thinking it's Saturday.
It was Saturday, right on.
It was Saturday.
Oh, it's fresh. Oh, it's fresh. I can smell it like musk in the air.
Oh, no, am I lying? I'm lying. It was Friday.
Uh-oh.
It was Friday night.
Now, guess what?
Friday
now night. You got a new fight coming your way if she listens.
No, we don't. And so it wasn't exactly a fight. It was like a tense conversation.
Those are the best.
Because we don't really fight that much. We mostly have tense conversations.
Yeah.
And what had happened was, it was sort of like all of the things compiling together. So my wife is in the midst of, she's a scientist. She works at a company called Genzyme and does experiments and stuff. And so she is got a master's degree in health communications and is sort of trying to figure out if moving from the lab to more of a outreach position, sort of human resources, marketing stuff for science and science companies is the way to go. And so to figure that out, she's got this little writing gig that's happening that's going to take up about 10 hours of her week while she experiments with it. So that was starting between last weekend and Sunday, like yesterday, that the process of starting that was happening. So she was a little, how long is this going to take? Is it something I can really do? Like those normal anxieties that come with a new activity or a new task.
Well, especially when your kids, because you have 9-year-old twins, am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, identical twins who are 9.
All right, so they're in the kind of the sweet spot where they could go get themselves a snack or find ways of entertaining themselves, but they're not. You can't completely disengage and focus entirely on work, especially when both of you are working, right?
Right.
That's exactly the struggle. That's that. Yeah, I'm right there with you, brother.
Yeah, and so my wife's job is like a 9-to-5, and then there's this extra 10 hours thing, and much like your wife is incredibly supportive of your sort of experiments and trying to figure things out, so is my wife, because this ADHD coaching business that I'm doing, you're not wrong. There's a decent amount of me making it up as I go. Like it's not like I got hired somewhere and I do what they tell me. Like I do what I think
this is your business,
right? In order to make this business happen. Yeah, it's me. It's all me. So figuring out how to make that successful requires a decent amount of work. And it's also a risk because the money I make each week can vary. Sometimes it's not like I'm always meeting with the same number of clients or I have the same number of workshops. Some weeks I'm making a good amount of money. Sometimes I'm making, you know, like just enough. And so that's sort of an underlying anxiety. And then my wife on top of that is taking on this extra responsibility while she considers a career change of her own. And then my son woke up and puked his guts out.
Oh.
So yeah. And so it was a little bit of a tense morning. Her anxiety got spiked because he was sick and she was kind of short with me. And it just doesn't, first thing in the morning, if I get woken up with like, hey, let's blah, like just that straight direct conversation, it's hard. It doesn't work for me. I wake up grumpy.
Yep.
And then I'm like, but I know I'm not being fair. And you like, I figured it out. She was anxious because he was sick. I'm like, I got you, but I'm still going to avoid you and try to not get in your way because you're just fussy and cranky. And so then she's texting me during the day. I'm sorry. Do you need me to come home early to like help out? And I was like, no, I got this. One of the advantages of this job that I have is I can make my own schedule and I can figure out holes and gaps and make it work. So that's what I did. And then by the time the evening rolled around, she was like, how come you're mad? And I was like, I'm not mad. You know, that conversation that happens.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm just, you're not enjoying me right now. And so I'm not going to be in your way. That's all that's happening right now.
But in order, I love the way you put that. You're not enjoying me right now. Not in a like a high maintenance or entitled way. You're just saying it's a polite way of saying you're not happy with me. So I'm going to help you become happy with me by not being in your presence in this moment.
It wasn't even that. I just didn't want to make it worse.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm just going to.
That's such a husband way to look at it, too. That's great. That's funny.
But in order to do that, I have to be a little like, not grumpy exactly, but like stern and direct and like just stand there. And if she's moving back and forth in the kitchen and I have to walk through the kitchen, I just stand there and wait till she's done. And then I go, as opposed to like the gentle dodges and stuff that usually happen.
Yeah.
Because I get uncomfortable with the gentle dodges because there's some affection in there a little bit. But that's not a thing that I want to do right now. I'm not going to like walk by and give you a little hug on the way by. So I'm just going to give you. I'm going to pretend that your personal space bubble is even bigger than it usually is, and I'm going to stay out of it.
That's great. I love it. All right, let's get into a little bit. Thank you for indulging me on that. Let's get into a little bit of the ADHD. The first thing I want to go into, because I think if I have a kid who has ADHD, right, I get it. To me, ADHD is very akin to peanut allergies. Where you can have the old school mentality of like, you know, we didn't have peanut allergies when I was a kid. And we've talked about on the show with Dr. J about a big reason why there's this spike in them is because doctors were trying to avoid them by having peanut allergy be an issue by that is what I mean, by having them not have peanuts until later. And that was actually part of the problem, that if you introduce peanuts into the diet earlier, that you would decrease the chances of your kid developing a peanut allergy, which is very interesting to me. So I'm wondering if there is any kind of connection between that, because I think if you have a kid with it, you get it. But if you don't have a kid with it, it's like you're so stupid and ignorant. Listen, it's not done with malice, but I'll admit that I've just been like, hey, don't give your kid as much sugar. Or just say, hey, focus up. Like there's a little bit of that because you don't have the perspective of somebody, of a kid who has it. So
let me go you one further.
Do it.
When it comes to professionals who work with folks who have ADHD, the ones who are the best at working with people who have ADHD are the ones who also have ADHD themselves.
Wow.
And I'm counted in that number. I have ADHD. So that's part of why I get to talk about it.
So why do you think all of a sudden, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll loop back to that. I just want to.
Okay. Yeah.
The reason I get to talk about it and say I'm an expert, cause you're right. I kind of did make this job up a little bit. There's other people who do it similar stuff, but it is sort of do it on your own kind of deal. So I have it. I understand it because of that. I have a master's in education and was a teacher, middle school English. So I get it sort of as the educational professional. And I also have a master's degree in counseling and have worked as a mental health clinician in the past. So I get it through two master's degrees and personal experience, and then doing the job. And so in terms of the increase in diagnosis and the increased prevalency of ADHD, I think there's a lot of different things that are all coming together to form Voltron in that scenario. One is standardized testing.
Really? Like,
yeah, we really saw an increase in ADHD diagnoses when standardized testing came around.
Now, when we see this, help me break this down, because there is a part of me that goes, are we dealing with a chicken or an egg before the egg situation, where it's like, does the emphasis on standardized testing just kind of show it, like make it show it up? Does it flush it out, or does it actually cause it?
So here's what ADHD is. ADHD is ADHD is horribly named. It's got the worst name in the whole world because the name implies that the focus is not where it is. So it's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is the official name, except it's got a whole lot more than just attention as pieces of it. Attention's there, but it's no more or less important than time awareness or organization or any of those things. It's also not a deficit of attention in any way. It's an inability to regulate your attention.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is different, right? Because if you and I are hanging out and you're talking to me and I'm staring at my phone, you're feeling like I'm not paying attention to you and I must have a deficit of attention. But that's not the case. I am paying attention. I'm just not paying attention to you. I'm paying attention to my phone.
I was really hoping it would break down to being a very adapted ability to multitask, but nope.
It's not.
That's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
That's funny. So it's not an inability. So it's not to use the classic reference from Up, and I'm sorry if I'm being ignorant and rude on accident. Here's that. But it's like, you know, squirrel. It's not right. The constant distraction. It's that it's really about an inability to focus on multiple things.
Yeah. And also, the ADHD attention works differently from your neurotypical attention. So someone who is neurotypical doesn't have ADHD, right? Their attention works as we would expect it to. Their attention is a lot like a flashlight. They kind of shine it where they want it to be, and that's the thing they focus on, and they're good. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's how we think of attention, right?
Yes.
My attention, people with ADHD, our attention is a lot like a candle, and it's sort of lighting up the whole room. And we have to work really hard to filter out all of the noise and only pay attention to the things that are important.
Okay.
So I have to not pay attention to the fact that I'm cold or the sound of the person walking behind me while I'm speaking to you. And I have to, and the squirrel, right? I have to not pay attention to the squirrel, except that it moves quick and it's very distracting.
So it's not it is and isn't about distraction then. It's about distraction, but in the sense that, it's not in the sense, I guess it is. What I was going to say is it sounds like it's more about hypersensitivity than it is about an inability to focus on one thing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's a good way to put it. And it's also developmental. So an ADHD brain lags about 30% behind its peers, which is hard math because it's a base 12 system when you're looking at months. So an easier way to look at that is it's about 1 to 3 years in your typical kids. And that really matters. Even if we just take the middle of it, the 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
A kid who is in seventh grade, if his brain is in some ways developmentally lagging 2 years behind his peers, for some stuff, he's in fifth grade.
Yeah.
We just went from the center of middle school to the end of elementary school.
Right.
That's a big change. And it's not going to be for everything. He might do homework like you would expect a seventh grader to do it. But he might have trouble with long-term projects and do those more like a fifth grader might.
Well, and so a non-diagnosed,
there's a lot going on.
A non-diagnosed kid, I know this stat, and it's one of the reasons why I'm getting a tutor over the summer for my first grader, because he's a little bit behind. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is that if your kid is at grade level or above, over the summer they lose, like, say, 6 months of learning, or 3 months is a better example. So say they lose 3 months of learning. Well, if they're already a year behind, then now they're 15 months behind after the summer is up. But if your kid is ahead, then they're right at grade level. And they just pick up, and the train doesn't stop moving. So right. That's why a kid, and I imagine if you're using your description, and it's even harder for you to get caught up because you're just hypersensitive to all the stimulus that's around you, it creates an almost insurmountable task.
Mm-hmm. And another piece of that stimuli, or that stimulation rather, is my internal thoughts too, right? Mm-hmm. So if I've got ADHD and I'm failing more often because I have ADHD, so I'm falling behind, struggling with my assignments. Now at some point, I start to worry about that and perseverate on that. And I'm like, I can't do it. Like, how come I can't understand this? How come all the other kids are doing fine and I'm struggling? Why is that? How come? And now I have to filter out not just the desk squeaking and the kid who's tipping in his chair. I also have to filter out all these internal thoughts. And that's where ADHD leads to anxiety and shame pretty quickly.
Now, is it unfair to expect a kid, like, I get it that you have to have a certain level of sensitivity, but just even hearing what I'm hearing from you is that it doesn't negate the idea of just saying, hey, we need to focus in on that, because it sounds like it can be worked like a muscle and you can learn to focus in. It's just you have to work harder than, say, someone else who doesn't struggle with this.
Right. Yeah. It's about skill building. The best way to manage ADHD is to build skills that support the challenges that you have, and then externalize anything that you can where it's hard for you, right? Okay. So, like, people with ADHD struggle with time and understanding how time works, because a minute is not a minute and an hour is not an hour. Like, they just, sometimes an hour feels like a minute and sometimes a minute feels like an hour. And everyone experiences that. But with people who have ADHD, it happens much more often and much more regularly. So using a timer to help them know and understand how much time has gone by, or having clocks in every room of the house to help them understand what time it is a way to externalize that sense of time.
Hmm. Interesting. I want to go back to what you were saying. You were going through some reasons why we've seen kind of like a spike mm-hmm. in diagnosis, and you said standardized testing, and then I think I took you off track from there.
That's okay. We're talking about ADHD. We exactly. shouldn't be going in a straight line.
I just realized that it's maybe the blind leading the blind is what I'm just realizing. By the end of this, we're going to be talking about the mating habits of the hippopotamus.
That'll be all you, man. I have nothing. I know nothing about hippopotamus.
I'm sure you have strong opinions. So how does standardized testing help with that? Or is it a cause, or is it like what I said earlier? Is it just kind of flushing out and pointing out that these kids are struggling?
It's a measuring. It's a measuring device. It's, oh, okay, this kid is struggling, right? Like, he didn't do as well as we thought he was going to do. What's going on? And we start to get that feedback. And the kids who are struggling on the standardized testing, well, why? And ADHD is a really easy diagnosis to make that's going to get them the skills they need, even if it's wrong. If you treat ADHD correctly and you approach it from a skill building perspective, then you're going to get the kids the study skills and the organizational skills they need to be more successful in school, even if it's the wrong diagnosis. The risk there is, if it's the wrong diagnosis, you're not treating the right diagnosis. So you might not be getting the underlying stuff that just makes something look like ADHD, because there's a ton of lookalikes.
Mm.
Everything from bipolar disorder can look like ADHD. Trauma, abuse, neglect, that stuff can look like ADHD. And if we're treating it as ADHD and we're not looking at trauma, we're not getting this kid all the help that they need.
Are there any other factors for why you think there's this jump up in kids becoming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of it is just everything is more prevalent now because we're diagnosing it now, where we have better diagnostic tools. We have a better understanding of what these things are. There's less societal shame and guilt wrapped up in being diagnosed with something. So I'm more willing and comfortable with having a diagnosis. So mom and dad who 20 years ago might've been like, my kid doesn't have ADHD. He's fine. Right. I don't want to have that on his record. Now they're like, okay, cool. He's got ADHD. Not a big deal. So that by itself is going to increase diagnosis.
Hmm.
And then also, like, I suppose there's environmental factors that we don't know about yet. Like that maybe there is something to chemicals in the atmosphere. It's not something I subscribe to because the science isn't really backing that up yet. And I try to be as science-based as I can, but it may come out eventually that that's a component too.
Well, I imagine that that there's probably a lot of publicity behind screen time. That seems to be something that gets a lot of stuff thrown at it.
Absolutely.
I feel like screen time and tablets have become the rock and roll of today. Like it's it's the devil's music. It's ruining our kids. And
well, except that we have studies showing that kids who spend an exceptional amount of time on screens do in fact have more difficulty regulating their emotions and do in fact have more difficulty bringing the focus they need to bear. So that stuff is happening. It's all neurological stuff. We haven't perfectly explained it, but we do know that it's a phenomenon that is real and that actually happens. And it's not that it's poisoning you morally. It's that it's changing how your brain works.
So what you're saying is that there is scientific research that would support that as opposed to there was a lot of opinion on Elvis's hips and what they did to young girls.
Right. So this stuff is all dopamine. Is where this comes in. Dopamine is the brain's reward chemical, sort of. It's like the anticipation and reward chemical. It makes you want to do something that makes you feel good for having done it. In the ADHD brain, you're not making as much dopamine and you're not utilizing it efficiently. So the ADHD brain has issues with dopamine and wants more all the time. And that's why people with ADHD tend to take risks and engage in risky behaviors.
Well, and you also being a nerd, I don't know if you're a big Portal 2 fan. But one of the interesting things that I love video games. And one of the things I found interesting was I was watching like a behind the scenes of this game because I just was fascinated by how it's such a simple concept and so much fun to play. And then the developers basically broke that down as to why. They said that the trick of designing these individual little levels for the game was it was all psychological and that they have to find something that could be figured out, right? They have to find that perfect middle ground between hard enough to where it was, you felt like good when you did it, but not so hard you were so frustrated you wanted to give up. And then, and so if that's what, say, a video game is doing, and if you have ADHD to where you're more sensitive to that little dopamine release that you get when you figure out how to get to the little, you know, nugget at the end of the level, then it's an amazing little trip for you. It might as well be acid or heroin or as a better example.
Absolutely. And dopamine is the core of all addiction.
Yeah.
So there you go. And the same is true for Facebook likes.
That's true. Let's take a break and talk more about this after these messages. Oh, I love that song because not only is the word focus in the title for what we're talking about here, but it made people in the radio station that I worked at very nervous because they say fuh. They were just so worried about getting a $250,000 fine from the FCC because they say fuck us. Like it just said the little hairs on your neck stand up when you hear that. Anyway, so we were talking about reasons. I don't want to cut you off or cut you short. Is there any other things we've talked about, you know, environmental, we've talked about screens, we've talked about standardized testing, but it seems to be that the real reason, if I can look at this through a scientific brain, is that the real reason why we're seeing more diagnosis is because, like anything, is that when we discover a syndrome or disorder, however you want to phrase this, anything of that nature, it's like before, before polio, right? If you think about it, once they figure out what polio is, it stands to reason that there will be an increase in diagnosis of polio, because before that they thought it was an intense flu, maybe, right?
Right, right, yeah.
So that's the real reason why we're seeing more of this.
Mm-hmm. And it's about when it becomes prevalent in school, because that's when school finds out about it, then the diagnosis increases, because that's where the challenge comes up most often. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
And so I will not be surprised if we see ADHD diagnoses go down in the near future, because schools are starting to become more sensitive to trauma. So like abuse and that kind of stuff.
ADHD.
Might start getting kids that might have otherwise been diagnosed with ADHD get diagnosed with trauma instead.
Or bipolar, because you were saying there were other things that can be disguised or believed to be ADHD, but in actuality, like I think you said, bipolar is one of them.
Right.
And any other kind of trauma could also be that.
Even lack of sleep, vitamin deficiency, all of that stuff can look like ADHD too.
Hmm. So how do I go about getting my kid diagnosed? Is that something that I should leave to a pediatrician or a psychologist or both?
Yes. Yeah. Pediatrician, psychologist. That's the way to go.
Now, let's say I'm listening to this right now and I go, you know, I think my kid, because you got we always joke. It's like, oh, that's my ADHD. And I'm sure if you have it, it's really offensive to somebody who doesn't have it. But everybody believes that on some level they have this, right? Is there a point, or is there a telltale or a red flag, fireworks that go off if I'm a parent and go, I need to have somebody looked at or have my kid looked at and assessed for this?
Yeah, when it becomes damaging, right? Like if it's hurting you, that's when you want to look at it, because everybody gets sad, right? But not everybody has depression.
Yeah.
So everybody gets distracted. Everyone has trouble in school. Everyone has trouble at work. Everyone has challenges with organization and not having enough time to do the things they want to do. Everybody has those challenges. ADHD is like the central challenges of life turned up to 11, right? We just struggle more with that. A metaphor that I often use is asthma, right? Because if you have asthma and you run out of breath sometimes, that's a central challenge of life, breathing. And if you and I go and stand by a smoky fire and we both start coughing, we're not going to be like, oh, we both have asthma. You know what I mean? No, it's just smoky outside. Or if we run around the block and come back at the same time roughly and we're both winded, we're not like, oh, we both have asthma. Now, I happen to have asthma. So if I don't get my inhaler, if I don't get my intervention, I'm going to be in a world of hurt and I might die, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas you're going to cough a little bit and breathe a little deeply and have to slow down for a second, and then you'll be okay. And with ADHD, it's the same sort of scenario, right?
Like, yeah.
The interventions for ADHD are necessary to help us be successful, because back to asthma, if I give you my inhaler after we run around the block, it's still going to help you breathe better even if you don't have asthma. But that's not proof that you have asthma. That's just proof that the medicine works in the body the way it needs to work.
It opens up airways regardless of if they are asthmatic.
Right. And ADHD interventions work for people who don't have ADHD. But strategies for people who are neurotypical, many of them do not work for people who do have ADHD.
What I like about what you're saying here is, and I want you to correct me if I'm misreading this, is because I think I have an old school mentality about this stuff, and it's ignorant in that I think that if you have ADHD, then you got to get your kid on Ritalin, and everybody's like, well, I don't really want my kid on Ritalin, because to use your asthma, there's a reason why college kids were using Ritalin to study and cram in and right. A good study session before finals. Is because just like asthma would open up your airways if you're not asthmatic, if you don't have ADHD, but it gives you the ability to focus in on what you're studying. Mm-hmm. But what it sounds like you're saying is that you can use, like, here's a prime example to go back to your asthma analogy, is that I was diagnosed asthmatic. And then I went through this diet program and I lost a bunch of weight and was eating better and basically I was really inflamed in multiple areas in my body. And when I got rid of the inflammation, my body has a different ability to now deal with bronchial infections. So I don't have as many issues with asthma as before. Mm-hmm. Right. So right. But so now what I do is I use that inhaler as a last resort. So I could have even, it doesn't even necessarily need to be a ADHD expert such as yourself or somebody who has a certification in that area, is that if my kid is struggling in school and it's because they have an inability to focus, I don't necessarily use that to say, well, he's got ADHD, he's screwed, he's hosed, there's nothing he could do, the odds are stacked against him. But maybe what I do is I invest in some tutoring or some extra work to get him used to flexing those muscles and just kind of struggle and push through that so that he could get better. And if we try that for a while and it's still not getting him where he needs to be, then maybe we start to look into, prescription options. Is that a fair assessment or no?
Sort of. I want to split some hairs on that.
Do it.
One, take medication, don't take medication. I don't care. That's your jam, right? I can't prescribe medication. So that's not a thing I worry about. It works, but not everyone wants to use it. And sometimes it's really hard to find the right medication and sometimes it doesn't work. So okay. Medication, I can take it or leave it. My approach is entirely skills based. So I'm going to help you understand how to break that task down into manageable chunks so you can accomplish your goal. I'm going to help you figure out how to externalize time with calendars and with timers and clocks and all those kinds of things, to-do lists, so that you can practice that consistently enough that you are better at remembering what you have to do and doing things on time. I'm also going to talk about the emotional impact that ADHD has and help address that. And this is where my biggest pushback for you comes from, which is just making that kid work more might be counterproductive. Because a kid that is struggling with ADHD and is failing all the time, giving them more work to fail at is just going to make them hate that work more. And it's not fair. And it's going to increase their anxiety. So instead, we might want to give them less work so that it's more manageable emotionally and so that they can meet with some success and start to build up that self-confidence and build up that belief in their own agency. And then we bring in a little more work after they've met with success and are feeling capable.
So it's like if you got a young quarterback in a football game and they're struggling to complete some passes or they've thrown some interceptions, the first thing you do is you get them their confidence back by throwing some screens or some short passes that you know that the completion percentage is high, and then they can get a little confidence. So because the thing that concerns me that I don't want to sound like I'm pushing back or saying you're wrong. I'm inquisitive. Is that if my kid is falling behind, right, and say it's due to ADHD, and I need to get him caught up, the solution of him doing less seems counterintuitive. But it works in my is that you're not even saying I need to go to school and I need to say, listen, overall he needs to do less work, right? Mm-hmm. I think that what you're saying is that that's going to be whatever it's going to be. And that my solution is oversimplifying it to say, well, on top of what he's already doing school, like 6-7 hours of school, not counting homework, I'm going to get him an extra 2 hours at the end of the day with a tutor, which is going to have the same negative impact of throwing another interception. It's just more of the bad stuff. But if I work with this tutor and explain to him, like, listen, I want things to be very simple. And I'm also, in addition to working on these skills and developing these academic things, I want the priority is to build up his confidence. So I want to start with things that they're going to succeed in and then work our way up to getting caught up.
Mm-hmm.
So
and even beyond that, right, we bring in the tutor, kids struggling in school, like you said, 6 hours, 7 hours in school, plus however much time it takes to homework. Now we're going to bring in that tutor. That tutor should be helping your kid do the work that he's doing for school. Like if your son has to write an essay for school, you don't want to also have the tutor having him write a second essay because he's bad at writing.
Right.
That's not a plan.
Right.
You want to have the tutor help him break down that essay for school into manageable chunks and help him understand how to craft an effective introduction and why that's important. And all of it's like reteaching what the teacher already taught, but kids with ADHD often need that reteaching. That's why they fall behind in the first place. They didn't get it the first time around. So they need a little bit of extra support and they need more skill building to help them get to where they need to be. And you can completely reduce the amount of workload that a kid is using and help them in the long run. So sticking with an essay, let's say it's a 5-paragraph essay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why can't it be a 4-paragraph essay? It's the same skill. It's just how much of it you're doing. And if it's going to take three times more effort to write a 5-paragraph essay than it will take them to write a 4-paragraph essay. Let them do the 4-paragraph essay. The 5-paragraph essay is going to make them hate writing. And if they hate to write, it's going to be hard for the rest of their academic career and into adulthood. But the 4-paragraph essay might make them only kind of not like writing that much. And now they're more likely to be able to go forward with their writing and find and meet success and then start to like it maybe.
Yeah. And it's a tough one because this is what I run into with all of this stuff is that I'm very much like a work ethic guy. I like a strong work ethic. In fact, I got into it with my younger son yesterday because the football game wasn't going the way that he had hoped. And then and he had already had this happen. We scrimmaged another team and he got upset and I laid into him. I said, dude, I said, cause he made it to where we didn't have enough kids to play because he's just like, he gave up. And I said, I'm sorry, man, but I don't accept giving up. I said, especially when things get hard, because that's life. Life is, things are going to get rough. More often than not, you're going to have to work for something than somebody's going to give you something. Mm-hmm. And I said, my two biggest things for you both is that I want you to be good people and I want you to work hard. I said, because I think if you put those two together, that all of the other things, you'll have stronger relationships. I think you'll find a lot of fulfillment in what you do and how you carry yourself, which I think mostly leads to a sense of happiness or accomplishment. I think you'll have stronger relationships within your own family as well. Yeah. And hopefully that will beget success within your job or career or whatever it is that you choose. Right. And so he did it again to me on Sunday. And so I had to pull him from the game because he just would fall over and act like he was hurt. And I told him, I said, you know, the problem that I have with that is that you're lying. And that's not what a good person does. And that I said, and when you're doing that and you really do get hurt, I don't treat it like you're hurt. I treat it like you're lying because I can't tell if you're hurt or not. I said, but I saw nobody hit you. Nobody did anything to you. You just fell over and are just like, ow. And then I go, and then you make me look like a jerk to all the other parents who don't know you like I know you. And when I pick you up by one arm and say, okay, get over there and sit down. They're like, man, that guy's really, what a dick he's being to his kid. And I said, but then they're watching the football game and they don't see that 2 minutes later when you know that I'm not paying attention to you and I look over the corner of my eye, suddenly there's nothing wrong with you and you're totally fine. And so go ahead.
Can I put on my coaching hat?
Please.
And poke around in that story a little bit?
I want you to.
Awesome. And so some of what I do is I coach parents, right? That's depending on how old the kid is, a lot of the time I'm working with the parents. And so there's a ton in there. One, the first thing is change how you're talking to him about football or really almost anything. I took my kids, I had them play basketball, and we're my whole family's short, so maybe not the best sport, but they like to bounce and basketball is a good ADHD sport because it never stops. And I said to them, like, look, we're not playing basketball to learn how to play basketball. I don't care if you get a basket or not. I mean, I want you to learn to dribble, but that's about as basic as it gets. That's really all I want. The reason we're playing basketball is so that you can learn to be resilient. I want you to learn how to get knocked down and get back up again.
Correct.
I want you to learn how to struggle and be bad at something and keep sticking with it until you get better at it. That's the plan. And when your kid is like, I don't want to do this anymore. I hate it. He's frustrated and just wants to quit. Yeah. The way you've said it about, I don't accept that, that's one way, and it's strong and it's stern and it's good. But what if you said to him, you know what? I'm struggling with this, with your wanting to quit, because this is not about football. The lesson that is in this hiding inside this game that I really want you to know about is that we are learning, you are learning how to get knocked down and get back up again.
Yes.
You're learning how to not want to do something and do it anyway. Because when you get older, you're going to have to do that. So I know that you can get back up right now. And I know that you can get back in there. And I believe in you. And I also know that you might not love it. You might not even like it. You might hate every minute of it. But it's only going to last for another 30 minutes. And you can handle that. So I'm going to challenge you to get back up and get on that field. Because I know that you can do it. Even if you don't like it, I know that you can do it.
Well, what I did say, I don't disagree with your point, because I think if there was a shortcoming, listen to the way I said that. I didn't mean that to come out that way, but that's really funny. If there was a singular shortcoming in my parenting, Brendan, if I could fairly diagnose myself, because I'm entirely unbiased in how I parent my children, but no, I think that is, from what I've talked to in multiple experts, like whenever your area is psychology or therapy or child development, or in your case, ADHD, like that's the common kind of note that I get a lot of, it's about how you're delivering the message.
Right.
So I get that part of it. There is an element to me that agrees wholeheartedly. The problem is that I am a work in progress, and to enact that element in a moment of frustration or anger is also not my strength.
Absolutely.
But I did go into the idea. I said to him, I go, guys, I don't care about who wins or loses this football game. I said, you guys are in first grade and third grade, and they both have told me that they want to be professional football players. And so I try to walk the line between completely shitting on their dreams and explaining to them that the likelihood statistically of that happening is nil. But I try to use this as an opportunity to get a thing that no matter what profession they do, it will help them. And so I say to them, I say to them, I go, what I care about is that thing. I didn't put it in the way you put it with resiliency, but I said, what I care about is that how you deal with things when they get hard. I said, when things are easy, it's easy. I said, so to me, That's a given. I said, but when things get rough and I go, you buckle and give up or let your emotions get the better of you when you're struggling, I said, I get the frustration. Trust me. I said, there's a reason why I'm talking to you about this is because, and I tell them stories about how I would literally call their mother crying because I had a stand-up show that went bad. And awesome. I said, and how long it took me to get to a point where that didn't bother me. And that when I got to that point of it not bothering me is actually when I started having strides of success in stand-up comedy, because it made it to where I was more capable of doing what I was there to do. And that, but when I got in my head, when I got too worried about how I wasn't succeeding enough, that I was, it stifled my success. But when I kind of let go and did it for and focused on the job and the task, not at how much I was succeeding or failing, but just focused on the job itself, then all of a sudden it worked out.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I was saying awesome because it's awesome that you shared that information with your kids, not that it's awesome that you bombed.
No, I gathered. Either way, I would accept either way. It's fine.
Well, I mean, there's lessons in bombing, too, so that's
right. Cool. Well, that's what I told him. I said, see, because here's the thing, and there was another thing. The part that makes me angry at my younger son right now is that he does this thing where he's playing like kind of a victim a little bit, where he told me some story about how I said, do I expect you to do everything perfect? And he said, yes. And I go, oh, really? I said, you think I expect you to do everything perfect? And he said, yeah. And I go, come on, man. You can't bullshit me. I'm your father. I said, I know you. And I said, and it's funny, there is a part of me that worries that there are people here listening that don't know my daily interaction. You're just hearing this anecdote and they're going, well, this guy's kind of fucking dick to his kid. And if that's the case, I'm going to take my own advice and go, ah, fuck yourself. You don't know me. And I'm going to move on. But because it's not. And I said, then why is it, if all I care about is you being perfect, then why is it I spend so much time telling you that failure is the best way to learn? What I tell you is not to be perfect and not to get it right. What I tell you is to not worry about messing things up, because that you should be focusing on learning so that you don't do the same thing again.
The biggest challenge I see for kids, right? And a big chunk of what I do is also this perspective taking, like trying to look at it through the lens of the kid and helping parents do that. To our kids, right? We are God. Like our opinion means everything, and our the pressure of that is bigger than we know. And so I think some of what he's experiencing, right, is that pressure. And he's not trying to be mean, and he's not trying to be disrespectful. He's just stuck because dad is amazing and he just wants to be perfect for dad. It's not that you want him to be perfect. It's that he wants to be perfect for you. And so he's misinterpreting that because he's a kid, because he's seven.
Yeah, he's seven. Yeah. Well, he'll be seven so in a couple months. But yeah,
okay, six. So he's six, right? So because our job as parents is it's not about being seven. It's not about them being 9 or 10 or whatever. It's about raising a healthy, well-adjusted 26-year-old.
Yeah.
Right? Like we have to take that long view. And sometimes, like I might fall on the other side of the spectrum from you where I probably let some small stuff go when I shouldn't because I'm like, big picture, we're heading in the right direction. Everything's doing okay. But I think you and I need to meet in the middle a little bit. Like kind of I need to come a little bit and be a little more about the small stuff. And you need to take the bigger view maybe and be like, oh, this exact moment is not that important.
I look for teachable moments as much as I possibly can. And to be fair, I'm talking about this on a parenting podcast say that I run my house like a boot camp would be unfair to myself, that there are lots of moments where we're just screwing around and talking silly and laughing and lots of cuddles on the couch and watching kid shows that I also enjoy with my kids.
Oh yeah. There's nothing about you that makes me think that you're like a huge jerk. Like that's not what I'm saying at all. So please don't take it that way.
Well, there's lots about me that makes me think that, but I want to go back to the point that you brought up because I do think that there is something to be said about them obviously wanting to make us proud and wanting ultimately our kids want our acceptance, right? All of that stuff. And I want to make sure that I understand totally what you're saying, because for me personally, if this is what I feel like, because my wife has hit me with this kind of stuff too, where she feels like I'm a little too hard on them, and she's come around now that she's home more often, which is hilarious, but oh, it's so funny. No joke. This morning I said I would go to the grocery store because I'm off today. So I'm going to go to the grocery store. My wife has been going to the grocery store. Now, mind you, I did this for 7-8 years until this last 8 months. I was the one always going to the grocery store, and she literally said the words to me and meant them. I said, well, I'll go to the grocery store later. She's like, really? And I go, yeah. She goes, you might get lucky again tonight. That is what my life has boiled down to, that by doing the quote unquote mundane tasks of family domesticated life, it turns her on, and not in a sense of like, look at that sexy man who's clipping coupons, but more of just purely prostitutional, like just a transaction. Now, if you do this for me, I will do this for you. Oh, it's so romantic. Oh, but anyway, my point is that the idea that if this is what I always feel like when the kid, you said the kid takes our word like we're God, right? Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then why is it that I have to repeat myself so many times to have them sit down? Or why is it that when I'm coaching them in a football team and I say, here, do this, that they aren't zeroed in on everything I'm saying and going, got it?
Because they're not developmentally there yet.
They're
6, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Oh, man, that sucks.
and not even just that. Like, I'm sure there's times when your wife tells you to do something or asks you to, and you're like, yeah, and then don't.
Very rarely. That's another, right? that's it. You didn't know me. And that's just an unfortunate, I get your example, because the one of the many fights, if I were to get through the interview of myself and the argument that I had, almost every argument that I would have had, the last one with my wife would be, you ever notice how when you ask me to do something, I just do it? Like maybe I'll mess up once, but after that I do it. But for you, it doesn't work that way. Like if I go, hey, don't do this, just do like this. Is that cool? And you go, oh yeah, got it. And then she'll do it 2 or 3 times, whatever it is. I'm not generalizing for the sake of not nailing down something specifically. Here's the reason I took over the laundry again is because before I didn't have time to do everything. And I said, well, we need to split this up, right? Mm-hmm. And then she would get behind. And instead of telling me that, hey, I didn't have a chance to do laundry this week, so can you do it today since you're off? Because she would feel bad. No matter how many times I said to her, I said, no, I don't care about doing the laundry. I just care about not having to manage or think about the laundry. So I would much rather you say, hey, I need help doing the laundry than for me to wake up while you're at work and the kids are getting ready to go to school and Jacob to say, I don't have any shorts. And now I got a half hour to figure out a way to get him some clean shorts or something. I go, that irritates me. that kind of stuff, right? So
yeah, I
gotcha. She could say to me, like, her last thing that I can remember was she hated when I would do the dishes and I would leave the cabinet, whatever last cabinet I put a dish in, I wouldn't shut the doors in it, and and that annoyed her. And so I was like, oh, okay. And then so now I just make it a point to shut the doors. And then the other one was I would leave trash out, like if I opened an Amazon box and then I leave it out. And now, to me, I feel like I would clean up after her, and so it's not a big deal if I forget. It's because I got distracted or thought about something else or whatever. It's not intentional, but when I know it bothers her, I just go, oh, okay, and I do it.
Yeah, and those things, remembering those things is harder for kids that are younger because their brains haven't developed.
No, that's a key point that that I have not been aware of until this point, until this moment in my parenting life, that developmentally, it's hard for me because there's a part of me that wants to shoot some hole in that a hole in that rationale too, but it makes enough sense that it makes me go, oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
I get it.
You can want to shoot holes in that all you want, but science is on my side. So
I believe you. I believe you.
And so let me poke around in there for a minute, right?
Go for
because
it.
It's important, an important perspective, because it speaks to your story from your son. One, his memory is not that great. He's going to forget stuff. And two, this is the biggest example, biggest element of your example, is his ability to regulate his emotions has not developed yet.
Correct.
Particularly when he's in high stress situations, you know, and football by itself is a high stress situation because of the competitive nature of it. And then you add in God, King, Dad watching and observing, and that increases the pressure. And now you're talking to him about how it's not working. And now his pressure is increasing even more because he's starting to feel bad and feel ashamed of himself and all that stuff. His anxiety is increasing. His amygdala is hijacked. The amygdala is the part of the brain that's responsible for emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And the prefrontal cortex is responsible for careful, logical decision making.
Correct.
And you can't get to the prefrontal cortex without going through the amygdala. So if the amygdala is firing off with emotion, especially strong emotion, you can't make logical decisions and you can't think very carefully about stuff.
Maybe I should better explain myself, is that to me in these conversations, because we talked about this very concept with Dr. Tina Payne Bryson and her book, The Whole Brain Child.
Yep.
And it's about how the emotional side of the brain develops before the logical side of the brain. And so as a parent, especially of a younger child, your job is to first deal with those emotions and get them calmed down, right? So that then you could start to draw the connections to the logic. And to me, that's what I'm doing. To be fair, he wasn't having his emotional breakdown on the field, and then I'm going into all of this. Like I pulled him from the game because I told him, I said, listen, you got to take some deep breaths. You got to calm down. I said, I get why you're frustrated, but I have to coach the entire team, and it's not just about what you want right now. I said, so you got to help me out and take those deep breaths. Keep breathing deep until you can calm yourself down. And then I'll set him down. Now, I feel like I was neglecting his emotions because, like I said, 2 minutes after this was over, probably even less than that, I look over. He's fine. He's not even crying anymore. The minute I'm not looking at him and he sees I'm focused someplace else, he's absolutely fine. Which, again, I don't think that means that it didn't hurt at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that this was not a trauma. And I think
I'm not saying it's a trauma.
I know you're not. I'm giving you my diary of the brain, like my stream of consciousness at the time, is that it's not as big a deal as maybe I perceived it to be for him, and that he's fine.
Can I flip it around a little bit?
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying I'm right about this. I'm just asking questions.
I am. I'm saying you're right. I don't even know what you're going to say, and I know you're right.
So I'm wondering, because that dad pressure side of it, right?
Yeah.
That part of it. He goes and sits over to the side. You're watching the game, right?
Yep.
So you're no longer interacting with him. Your attention is no longer on him in a way that he's aware of. So that dad pressure is gone, and that's helping him de-escalate more rapidly because he's not further escalated by the pressure of dad. And every dad has this unfortunate superpower and sometimes fortunate superpower, right? Like we all have it. But that, and so do moms for that matter, but he's not necessarily fine. He's just getting back to fine faster because he's feeling more
The pressure's not
like
there.
He's, the pressure's not there. He's a little yeah. more on his own flying solo. And every six-year-old thinks it's all about them.
Yeah. And I get that. I get that, except for...
That's the best part about team sports, right? Is they learn
right.
how to manage that.
And that's the reason why I was going back to that, is that I feel like what I'm doing is... this. I'm doing a skills assessment, like what you would do if your kid had ADHD. I'm helping him to kind of work through those skills. Maybe not as effectively as an expert would, but my goal in that moment is to say, I get that you're upset. Here's some, I always want to give them some tools that they could use. And the most common one that I seem to be giving them now, because it's they get upset and it's about pressure, right? Mm-hmm. Is about breathing and calming yep. down and making that the focus first. And then we can deal with the issue at hand, right? But I feel like I would be doing him a disservice if I didn't somehow once there was a right time, if I didn't go back and revisit that and kind of say, listen, we need to learn from this and we need to move past this.
Yeah. And do that in a completely different context. Don't do that on the football field.
Yeah. I did it in the car on the way home and then in the driveway is how it ended.
Do it the next day.
The next day?
Yeah.
Why not? Oh, boy. I don't know why you're not coming exactly. at it from a little bit more,
and here's my logic, right? And you can hate this idea. That's fine. The car ride home is still part of football,
right?
So your son is still got some of that emotional connection to football. He's still riding high or low or whatever on the emotions of the experience. And then we start drilling down in these skills. So I feel like I'm in trouble again, even though dad's doing it from a problem solving perspective and trying to help me build some skills. I'm still 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. So I still feel like I'm in trouble because that's the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. And I was just in trouble and I'm going right back to that feeling. It's building these negative emotional associations with that experience. So they might get to the point where they're like, I hate football. Because I'm used to getting in trouble for it, or it happens once and it's not a big deal. But if it's something that comes up more than a few times, one, you can have that conversation outside of the direct connection to football. And two, I mean, I've had conversations with my kids over stuff that they do that's not the best idea. And I hit the point where I'm like, all right, what am I going to say? And then they just tell me.
Yeah.
Because we've had that conversation so many times, they know what the lesson is. They're just not able to apply it yet. And so, because that can be a really big gap between I know what I'm supposed to do and actually doing it. That gap can be huge. And it's especially big for folks with ADHD. And I'm not trying to imply anything about your kids. That's what we're talking about. But as parents, it can be hard for us to accept that gap. Because we can often learn a lesson and then apply it immediately, or at least pretty quickly thereafter. And for kids, it can take longer.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That does. It does. I'm still kind of trying to wrap my mind around the idea of, because I feel like the reason, and maybe I'm trying to see if the reason I want to talk to him in the car is because I waited until, because after his game, his brother had a game. And so I went and I was kind of helping out, but on the sidelines, and I was talking to his brother and stuff like that. And I didn't bring it up at all. And then mm-hmm. when we left to go and got in the car and it was just us, he asked to ride with his mom. And I said, mm-hmm. no, you got to ride with me. And so he's like, oh, okay. And he goes and gets in the car. And so, and I talked to him. There was no.
How tense was it?
Not at all. Him? Not at all. Okay, well, here's the thing. It got tense.
Then you did it right.
It got tense after, like, he was okay. And I said, hey, listen, I go, we can't do this. I said, remember we talked about this on Friday. The only part that I don't like, and I told you like what I told you. I said, the only part I don't like is when you act like you're hurt. And secondly, it's that you're acting like you're hurt because the game's not going the way you want and you're giving up, I feel. And I said, and I go, why do you want to do that? And he said, I don't know. And I said, could it be because it doesn't feel good to miss a tackle or to get tackled when you're trying to run for a touchdown? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay. I said, well, but that's a part of football, right? I go, you can't expect because if you were to run touchdowns constantly and never get tackled, then the other team would be feeling what you felt today. And I said, so it's just it's a balance. That's why we play sports, is that so you can learn to deal with the bad part of the game and use it, in my opinion, as a way of learning and trying to get better. And I mm-hmm. said, and that doesn't, that's, I go, and the reason why this is such a big deal to me, and this is what I said in the driveway at the end, I said, I don't care about football. I know that you guys like the game and I love the game. I said, I love that. I said, but I feel like what football for you guys is that you can learn a lot about life from this. And I mm-hmm. said, so the thing that is most important to me is that you guys become people who don't give up when things get hard. I said, because that, I think that makes life really difficult. I said, but if you can learn now, and I said, and I'm not saying it's going to be easy and it's not going to be perfect. I said, because I mess this stuff up even now and I'm almost 40 years old. I said, but the sooner you can figure out a way to deal with the frustration of losing or things not going the way you would like for them to go and push through that and work harder towards your goal. I said, then I think it's better. It's just a better way to live and it's a more fulfilling life.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And I said, that's why this is important to me. I said, I'm never going to care that you lost a game or that you missed a tackle or you threw an interception. I'm never going to care about that. I'm going to tell you, hey, this is what you did wrong and this is what you should do the next time so that you don't do that again. I said, but when I'm saying that, that's just me trying to help you. I said, it's mm-hmm. not me thinking you're a bad person, you're a bad kid. It's not me thinking you're a bad football player. It's not that. It's that you made a mistake and now we got to figure out how to fix it. It's no different than knocking your cup over on the table. I said, it's just, yeah. it's my job as your dad to say, here's a better way to do this because I'm older and maybe I know a little bit more.
Right. Yeah, that's awesome. Like that, all of that is phenomenal. And I should make it really clear that I'm not here saying that you're doing a bad job.
Like, no, I don't think you are. Job. I'm sorry. No, I didn't think you were at all.
I also want to point out that we started this podcast with you talking about how your dad is full of wisdom and you're hoping that you can impart stuff on your kids, but you're not sure about that. As an outside observer, you're doing that, man.
Like, well, thanks.
Like that's part of why your dad can roll in with the wisdom that he has is that he's an outside observer. He's not going through the challenges that you've gone through with stand-up comedy and radio and
Brandon,
all that stuff.
You
like, he's
badass
of
son of a bitch. That is brilliant. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's part of why he can do it, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the same emotional stuff that's blocking him from seeing it.
Yes, it's why I think therapy is so great. I never put it in those terms, but it's because you have somebody on the outside who's looking at it and can kind of give you their feedback, and they're completely objective emotionally.
Right, and because this is a theme for this whole episode, because that's also what you're trying to do with your son on the football field, right?
Yep.
You're trying to be that outside observer while he's caught up in the emotion. And the trick is to do it when he's not caught up in the emotion. And you're giving him those breathing strategies to help him kind of wind down. You're giving him that little break from the dad pressure so he can come down more. And then we come back and revisit it. So that's awesome. Like you're doing it. You're doing those same thing your dad does for your kids. And that's my job as a coach, is to be that outside observer who doesn't have the emotional ties, which doesn't mean I don't root for my clients and
I cheer
for them and want them to be successful. And it's not heartbreaking when they fail, because all that stuff is true, but it's not the same for me as it is for them. Just like it's not the same for you as it is for your son. And it's not the same for your dad as it is for you.
Oh, that's good stuff. Let's take another break and we'll come back and do a little moment of the week. All right.
You made them. You love them. And sometimes you want to choke the living shit out of them. But occasionally, they give you that one sweet moment. This is that moment. Moment of the Week, brought to you by Dad Gear. All your child traveling needs packed into stylish, practical perfection. Designed by real dads for real dads and moms. Don't be the guy with a diaper purse. Be the man with a Dad Gear diaper backpack. Go to dadgear.com and use promo code DADPODCAST at checkout for 20% savings. Made in the USA.
Do you want me to go first?
Sure.
Or would you like? Okay, I'll go first. So I have a couple. There's one for each kid and then one that was kind of like a family one. But I'm going to share this because I've been talking a lot about this football struggle I've been having with my younger son, Jack. And that in the first conversation where it was not as calm as you, as I just described, that happened on Sunday. So this was the first instance, and it was Friday. And I told him that I was in the beginning, it was fine. but he was doing this thing where I don't know how to describe it. It's not, honestly, it's not worth going into. Point is that I definitely did not take the high road in parenting him. And so we get back into the house, and I kept telling him, I said, son, you got to talk to me. I said, I feel like you tell me what I want to hear instead of talking to me about what's going on. I said, and if you just tell me what I want to hear and it's not the truth, I can't, it makes it hard for me to help you. And all I want to do is help you. I want to help you figure these things out that are frustrating for you or hard for you. That's what I'm here to do. And I said, so it's really, really frustrating when you don't tell me the truth. And he just sat there staring at me. And I said, I go, okay. I said, if you don't want to talk about this now, that's fine. I said, whenever you do, I'm here. Just let me know. I said, all I ask is that you be honest with me. Okay. I'm honest with you. You got to be honest with me. And he just sat there. So I was like, all right. So we get home and we get in the house, and he was kind of hanging back in the car. And I was bringing all the stuff into the house. And I said, Jacob, what do you want to get for dinner? Because Natalie was off at a thing. And then I turn around, and I walk in the door, and he looks at me, and his eyes were red, like he was welling up. And he just said, I'm sorry, Dad. And I felt horrible. So I went over and I hugged him, and I picked him up, and I lay down on the couch with him laying on top of me, and I squeezed him. And I said, son, you don't have to apologize. It's okay. I said, I don't know. I go, why are you sorry? And he said, because I didn't do the right thing, is what he said. And I said, son, that's not a big deal. It's not a big deal to do the right thing. I said, you're going to make mistakes. I go, I do the wrong thing a lot, like a lot. It's part of growing up, and it's part of just trying to be a better person. I said, and I just kept hugging him and kissing him and telling him, don't worry about it. I said, but see here. And then I put him down so he could look at me. And I stole a page from Dr. Tina Payne Bryson's book, or when she came on here, and she talked about it. When your kid's upset, if you lay down and look up at them and say, I see you're upset, that it triggers that amygdala to say, oh, this person is not a threat. And it helps to connect to them real quick and see mm-hmm. through the fog. So I didn't lay down, but from now he's tall enough that when I'm sitting down on the couch and I kind of stand him up, he's looking down at me, and I kind of slouched over a little bit. And I go, see, this is all I need. I said, you tell me how you're really feeling and what you're really thinking. I go, then I can help you. I said, because I don't know how to react if I don't know what's going on in that head of yours. Okay. Mm-hmm. I go, I'm sorry that I got angry, and I'm sorry that I got frustrated. I said, that's not okay. I said, so I hope you understand where I'm coming from. And there was a whole other conversation, but it was a moment for me where I felt like, and I wanted to share it on this part because it's been a big part of this episode. And I feel like it was a moment of the week that came from not the usual touchy-feely, cute, huggy one, but it came from, honestly, a parental fail in that moment where I felt like I had failed him, but it still came out okay, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
So then the other one was, I don't know if you guys are big fans of the series of unfortunate events on Netflix streaming. If you are not watching the show with your kids and you have kids in the same age range as me, I really think you should check it out, because it is a very well-written show with lots of like kind of jokes and grammar puns and stuff in there. There's tons of stuff in there for adults, and the kids really enjoy it a lot. It's just a very well put together comedy for a family. I really think it's great. And so they just released the second season, and Jacob saw that they released the second season, and I was working, and he came home and they were going to watch it. And he said, no, we got to wait for Dad. And what he did instead was he binged watched the first season after school so he would be caught up. And then when he was there, it was the weekend. So we sat and we watched it together. And it's fun that I came home from work one day and they were watching it. And I go, how dare you? I was teasing him, but he's like, how dare you? And he goes, no, this is the first season. This is the first season. And it was cute. And the last one was April Fool's was on Easter Sunday, and I guess we didn't do anything April Fool's. And so yesterday, the kids decided that since we missed April Fool's, they were just going to do it again. So they were trying to April Fool each other. And Jack, the six-year-old, while the older one was in the shower, came out and arranged a very elaborate prank on his brother. And so, because she said, you guys, you need to take showers quick so you can get in bed. And if you get it done fast enough, we can do a treat like we planned. If we run out of time, though, we can't, which is a bullshit thing that she says. I mean, it doesn't matter if they take 45 minutes to take a shower. She's still going to give them a treat because she's their mother. But point is, so Jacob gets out of the shower. Jack has unhatch this plan with his mother. So I hear her in the kitchen go, he goes, can we get a treat? And she goes, actually, I'm sorry, son, but I told you, you had to take a shower in 15 minutes and you didn't take a shower in 15 minutes. So we can't do treats tonight, but maybe we could do them another way. And he just looked at her and he started to get upset. And he goes, and then he immediately just turned on his brother. He goes, but he took forever. She goes, Jacob. And then Jackie, I just hear from the kitchen go, ha ha, April Fools. And it's funny because you have the emotional roller coaster of the hurtfulness and just pure evil that comes from a practical joke. I mean, it's just horrible, right? Mixed with the immediate feeling of like, ah, you got me. Oh, you got me so good, which I thought was kind of fun to watch a 9-year-old kind of experience where he was genuinely pissed, hurt, upset, all of it. And then to be told April Fools and kind of have the point and the laugh and him to be completely okay with it, come out of it and go, that wasn't funny, but to be fine with it. Like, awesome. Yeah, I thought it was a cute moment. All right. Your turn, Brendan.
Cool. All right. So, Nate, my son, the eldest of my identical twin sons by 12 minutes.
Never gets old to me. I don't know if it gets old to you, but I never grow tired of that stuff.
My favorite twin thing that I don't do to my kids, but I do to other twins when I meet them, is my favorite question to ask them is to go, so how long have you guys been twins? And they always like look at me all confused for a minute.
I got to be honest, that broke my brain for at least 2 seconds.
That's what's good about it.
That's great. That's good stuff.
So Nate had a dentist appointment on Wednesday for this tooth that's been loose that we had to get pulled. And I'm bad at knowing why we're going to the dentist. I'm like, I don't know, we're going, they're going to do something to your teeth. Like, I can't tell you why. So I did not know that this tooth was going to get pulled, but I knew it was loose. And so we go in and he's going in to get the tooth pulled and he does not want to do it. He's like, I don't want the Novocaine. It's going to make my whole face numb. I don't like it. And then he realizes it's the loose tooth and he goes, it's really loose. Can I just pull it out myself? And the dental assistant's like, well, I'll go ask the dentist and see what she says. Dentist is like, sure thing. So they rub some numbing stuff in his gum. He sits there and wiggles it for like 3 or 4 minutes, pops it out. And he's relieved because he doesn't have to get any of the anesthesia stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm relieved because he saved me like $189 on nitrous. So, because they refunded that.
Yeah. That's great. That's a great dad move. Yeah. Did you give him any cut of that at all?
No, he doesn't. He gets a cut, but not on purpose. It just means that, yes, you can get that Captain Underpants book. Sure.
That's
thing.
Funny. That's great. That's good stuff. Oh, my gosh. By the way, as a nerdy dad, how much do you love the Captain Underpants?
So much that I'm trying to get Dav Pilkey on my podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, oh, because he does ADHD stuff in them.
Yeah.
And he talks about having ADHD. So I'm hoping that I can get him on the show. I'm in contact with his agent, but these things take time. And I don't know how long it's going to be. So,
if you could find out if he's running his own Twitter or something, that would be my suggestion. Like Julie Lithcott Hames.
Looking.
And so she wrote How to Raise an Adult. And she was like the first kind of author that I went after. Mm-hmm. And I talked to the publicist and publicist is like, she's not really doing interviews. And at the same time, because it had taken a couple hours, maybe that does mean I have this. I have no patience. It had taken a couple hours for the publicist to get back to me. So I'm like, oh, I'll find her Twitter. And I tweeted her and she had just a small enough following that she saw my tweet. And she was like, absolutely. And she gave me the email to her publicist. And I said, cool. I go, oh, well, that's in between the time that I go, I'm sorry. I go, I kind of tweeted her at the same time I emailed you. And she said she's down. And so the post was like, great, let's set it up. And I'm so glad I did. But, I understand the struggle, man. I totally get it. But I will sacrifice a goat in hopes that will create some good karma for you to get him on your podcast.
Awesome, thank you.
Did I cut off your story? But it was pulled.
Yeah,
I've
got a. So my other one.
Yeah, sorry.
I was at a sensory sensitive comic book convention, over the weekend. So it's like for kids with autism and ADHD and sensory challenges and stuff. It's just less loud, less crowded, more sensitive to those needs. And I was there sort of in two jobs: one with the ADHD stuff, and I also happen to be a comic book fan. So I was selling some comics at like the from my collection. And next to me is this artist, right? And my guys are obsessed with Jurassic Park at the moment, especially Gavin. And this guy's an artist. He's doing all kinds of random drawings for people. But he goes through my collection. He's like, oh, you have tick number one. Like, I would love to buy this, but I can't afford it. Like, can we trade something? Could I draw you a picture? I'm like, sure thing. Draw me a picture of my boys. I'm like, here's a picture from my phone. Draw a picture of my two boys, like being chased by a T-Rex. It will make their day.
That's awesome.
Yeah, right? So he does this for me. I'm like, awesome. This guy's great. I bring it home, especially this is for Gavin, the other kid. And he sees it and he's like, the T-Rex is awesome. But do I look like that?
That's great. No good deed.
Yeah, right.
That's funny. Like,
you kind of do.
Yeah. That's great. That's good stuff. Hey, you could reach out to Brendan Mahan. All of these links are in the description of this episode, but his website is ADHDessentials.com. And he's also on Twitter at ADHDessentials as well. And at Facebook.com/AD-AD-Essentials is where you can find him on Facebook. Give him a like. And also check out his podcast, ADHD Essentials is the name of the podcast as well. And soon to have, I totally blanked on his name. What's the guy's name again for Captain Underpants?
Daff Pilkey.
Yeah. Daff Pilkey, soon to be a guest. We're going to just put it that way. We're going to secret this. We're going to say it, and therefore it will be. And by the way, if anybody knows Daff Pilkey or any of his people that are listening to this show, send the guy a note saying, hey, come on Brendan's show. Make him look like a superhero to his kids, and he can actually interview the creator. And it's a good subject, right? The guy's already in tune with it. I think it's a win-win all around. AD Essentials is the name
ADHD
again.
Essentials.
ADHD Essentials, again, is the name of the podcast. Sorry, apologize for that, Brendan.
No worries. And Essentials, by the way, is ESSENTIALS.com.
Perfect. And again, the link is in the description of this episode, so don't stress about that. And if for whatever reason you can't find it, shoot me an email, and I will definitely get you over to his podcast, his website, all of that stuff. Brendan, we'll have to do this again, man. That was not only informative, but fun. And we did not get to what I wanted to talk about. We'll tease this if we do this again in a couple months. But you have some interesting thoughts on how playing Dungeons & Dragons or running a Dungeons & Dragons game can affect parenting styles. Is that a fair assessment of that?
Yes, it is.
And I am so excited to connect those two worlds. That would be fun for everyone. On behalf of Brendan Mahan, this is Justin Worship saying, hug your kids. Oh, before we do that, if anybody is curious, I've made some advancements in the fort, and there are some photos. I think I've said it on the Gary and Shannon segment I do here on KFI in LA, but I haven't said it here. There are photos and videos posted up just about at the end of every workday. I make a video, although I worked well into the night last night, so I couldn't. It was too dark for me to show you anything, so I'm going to do one a little later today. But you could see I broke the windshield in my car. You could see how that happened, and you could see how I solved that problem. All of that is at Facebook.com/DadPodcast or at DadPodcast on Instagram. All right, thank you. On behalf of Brendan Mahan, this is Justin Worship saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.